All right, we're good.
Hey, just let the pod just be very just organic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's how it should be, man. You you noticed the background here?
I see you have a shelf.
Changed up the pod room a little bit.
You have
changed
a shelf.
Up the pod room.
Did you just move your desk to the right?
Yeah, it just kind of shifted walls.
Nice.
I had to make room for the racing simulator. It was getting a little intense.
Wait, you have a racing simulator?
Yes.
That's a really dumb question. Of course you have a racing simulator. What do you not have?
I am going to send you a picture of it right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live recording this. Well, not live, but we're recording this right now.
Right,
he's sending me a picture of his racing simulator. I like to be in do not disturb mode when I'm working. Obviously, Javi's over here goofing off, gate team. So, what is going on with this rig, man?
This is business right now.
You have this chair here. This chair looks like about $4,000 by itself, okay? And then you have not one, not two, but three, what's that, 40-inch monitors?
They're 32-inch monitors, sir.
Okay, I'm a little, I don't have my trusty ruler on me. I apologize.
Yeah, I get it. I didn't give you any sort of scale.
You should have put Iron Man's head there. So I see the I see the wheel, the steering wheel, and then behind that is that a joystick? There's a joystick there. Are you also in Top Gun Maverick? So what are you in? Fast and Furious in Top Gun Maverick? You can do both.
We do some flying. Yeah, every once in a while.
You got a flight simulator on that thing too?
No, it's not a flight simulator. It's just a joystick to help get around a little bit in a couple of games. Well,
that looks awesome, sir.
It's a pretty good time. Pretty good time though.
How was the old weekend?
I was setting up a racing simulator in my pod room.
Is that Clyde? We literally just talked about this. We literally just finished talking about this.
Yeah, I did a lot of that. Moving stuff around here. I get a little more comfortable here in my room here. But as every other weekend, it rained.
Yeah.
So
I feel like we live in Portland.
Didn't.
Yeah. I hear it rains a lot in Portland. I don't know. I've never been.
I don't know. It's also at the land of books, right? Is that what, is that correct? No. All right. That's fine.
You're asking the wrong one. I don't, the last book I read.
That was from New Girl. Kind of disappointed you didn't catch that.
Oh, I did not catch that. You know why I didn't catch it, man? I'm going to explain why I didn't catch it, okay? I am still recovering from this amazing weekend, okay?
I didn't
realize until, I don't know, Thursday. So my office closed on Thursday for a retreat. I didn't go. I had some other stuff I needed to get done. I watched some basketball on Thursday. After I left the office, I watched some basketball, and then I came home. And I came home, I was at the bar, I watched some basketball, and I was like, oh, the new Roadhouse dropped. And then it dawned on me, I don't think I've seen the original from start to finish. I know, shame on me, I'm the worst. So what did I do? I hopped on Maxed and watched it, the entire thing.
Right.
I literally sweated for 2 hours, nonstop adrenaline, masculine guys with their shirts off. It's just the '80s were just a wild, awesome time, man. Okay.
And the Swayze era was intense in general.
I mean, you looked in his eyes, man. Kind of fell in love with
the Beatles, right?
My damn self. like, that's a essential 80s movie that I now can, like, put, you know, like, I've watched that movie. I'm so glad I did, like, from start to finish. I've seen a lot of the scenes, and I've seen a bunch of it, just never from start to finish. So, glad I did that. Mm-hmm. So, I was done with that.
That's good.
And so, obviously, I can go to Amazon Prime and watch the new reimagining one. And, oh, my God, for 2 whole hours, okay, I was sweating again, nonstop, bro. Have you seen Jake Gyllenhaal with a shirt off,
sweat,
man?
More sweat.
God, and then dude, Conor McGregor? What is going on here?
Just a lot of dude in that movie.
There's a lot of just man pecs going on. Love it.
Yeah, that was a fun ride. So you saw it. When did you see it? Like
Thursday. The day it dropped.
I think you were watching that like right after I finished watching it.
Dude, something probably, like that. Probably, man. I couldn't move. I was done. I was on the couch.
So opening thoughts on that one.
I like the reimagination of it only because like the original one was wild because like bouncers were like famous rock stars. It's kind of like how they portrayed Dalton. Like, he was this famous Beatles type rock star of a bouncer. You know who that is?
Right,
God, That's Dalton. Everybody knows it. I want to. I've thought for so long to get a piece of you, Dalton. You know what I mean? Like this guy's Mike Tyson or Conor McGregor. Like, you always wanted to whoop his ass or something like that. Like, that was weird.
I've just been waiting.
You know what I mean? But like the reimagining of the Jake Gyllenhaal kind of being a drifter, making his money, having a job, and then you know, just trying to help out with this bar, not really having a feel for how it's going to run, just using kind of his natural instincts. That made a lot more sense to me than this guy who Swayze was awesome, but like he was the guru of bouncing. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That was wild, but like it was high octane. It was fun. It was funny. Jake Gyllenhaal is a funny ass dude, man.
He really is. He is
low key hilarious. Yeah. But even like Conor McGregor, who everybody's like, oh, well, this is just a sell, or, you know, put more eyes on it. For what he brought to that character of Knox, we were not asking much, right? Right. But the character, but what he brought, it made the movie better, right? Because you have Jake's character as Dalton, who is a little psychotic, a little scary. There's something about him, right?
Yeah.
But there's a calmness. Then you have Knox, who there's absolutely no chill in this guy at all, right? So I like that dichotomy between the two. And they were great on scene. They were great together on screen, man. That was really fun. I had a good time.
Yeah, I enjoyed what Connor brought to the fight scenes.
Yeah.
His action and his just knowledge of how it's supposed to go, right? Like,
yeah,
when you fight somebody, it's got to look this way. You got to go this way. You know, you can't, you know, if you do this, you're going to look weak. If you do this, you look stronger, stuff like that.
Exactly.
So he really brought that. As far as his like acting, they didn't give him a whole lot to do, which I think was like
on
perfect
purpose
for him.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he just kind of had to come in and just be a menace and not really have to like say anything intelligent. Not saying the guy's not an intelligent guy. I don't know him like that. But, you know, for what they gave him to
You haven't invited him over for the racing simulator yet?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, he ain't been out to a cookout yet. But as far as like what you know of Connor is he's a fighter. And what you see like in public is he's just kind of wild. and it played right into that. And I thought that's,
yeah,
that was perfect role for him. His career going forward, we'll see if he does anything else. I mean, I'm pretty sure this is just like a vacation for him, because there ain't no way he's making the same amount of money on this than he does fighting.
Yeah, not at all.
We'll see if there's a future there for him.
But it's fun though, man. Like, that's what was really cool is it was just fun from start to finish. There was not a scene that I was like, this could have been a throwaway. Because even like the scenes with and I keep on forgetting the guy's name, but like the baddie that's in, like, the kid, billionaire
Brandt or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's Brandt or whatever, right?
Ben Brandt or something like that.
Like, even him, like, he was the chill version of Knox, as Knox was like on 10, 12 the entire time. Like, same thing for Brandt, but he was on like a 3. He was trying to do it a different way. And even like his scenes was kind of over the top, but still fun. Everything was fun. Like, this movie didn't try to be like this serious take on a bouncer and everything. They knew what they were doing, and they let these characters have fun. All in all, man, I say that the Roadhouse franchise, can we call it a franchise? Is that a thing now? Can we say the Roadhouse is a franchise?
I don't know.
Okay, I mean, we'll say,
there's no continuation here. It's just a movie, two different movies.
Well, we'll say this then, okay? Roadhouse with Swayze, Roadhouse with Jake, both as a guy named Dalton, Chef's Kiss. I've never seen a movie with so much booze, so much alcohol, so much testosterone, so much pectorals, and we got like so much man ass in this reimagining.
Just the most extended scene ever.
Like, guys, I'm not spoiling it. Like, go watch the movie. When we are introduced to Knox, there's a tracking shot of his ass. Conor McGregor's ass. There's a tracking shot for, like, y'all remember the movie 1970 that Sam Mendes did a couple years ago, won like a bunch of Academy Awards? Like, those tracking shots, that's what Doug Liman did with Conor's ass. Okay, it's got a nice tush for a grown ass man, but that's what happened. That's how we're introduced to this guy.
Yeah. It's one way to do it, man. I guess that's gonna be his. That might be his thing from now on. Maybe.
I'm not signing on to any movie unless you do a tracking shot of my ass. Connor, you know this is a children's movie, right? For Disney.
I said what I said, sir.
He's talking to his agent. Get the damn deal done. Welcome to the episode of Movie in a Pod. I am Clyde Smith.
And I am Javier Villalobos.
On this episode, we're discussing trailers for Alien Romulus, Taro, the first two episodes of X-Men 97, and our movie of the week, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It's a scary week, guys. I actually don't know why I'm dancing right now. I've listened to this track 90 million times. It's still a banger. Still a banger, dude.
It still works very well for me. Yeah.
All right, team. We got some trailers coming at you here. So we have another entry into the Alien franchise with Alien Romulus. And we have another one of those movies where it's scaring you to not do something that you enjoy doing anymore. So some people enjoy playing with tarot cards. This movie is going to scare you by not wanting to touch them damn things. They're going to probably come after Uno next, bro. You know what I mean? Like, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Can't do anything. So, guys, so we got these trailers. We're going to throw these on our socials. We have a link tree somewhere. Show notes. Click on that.
In the
follow bio? Us on all of our socials. We do have a bio. Follow us on everything. And like, share, subscribe. Appreciate you guys. Hey team. We got Alien Romulus. According to IMDb, while scavenging the deep ends of a derelict space station, a group of young space colonizers come face to face with the most terrifying life form in the universe.
Mm.
Wow. So, yeah. I know very little about this movie. I actually forgot they were even making it, because I'm still waiting for Ridley Scott's like trilogy of the Alien prequels. But, wow. This looks dope, man. Like, even the minute that we got, this is kind of going back to... Alien kind of turned into kind of a... not a scary, but like more of an action adventure. Like, let's try to stop these aliens or whatever and survive.
Yeah.
The Alien from the start was a horror film in space. It was dark. It was cramped. It was creepy. This gives me that vibe just on like, I don't know, 15, just the amount of face huggers that are chasing everybody and kind of running and jumping. That's going to be creepy, man, in the theater. That's going to be fun to watch in theaters with a crowd. Yeah, this is, like I said, we just got a minute, so we don't have much, but I am ready for this movie. August 16th cannot come soon enough.
Right.
What are your thoughts, man?
Yeah, same. Dark, you know, explosions, creeping around corners, all that stuff where you kind of, you know, they're going into the corridors and last thing you want to do is look down that hallway, the dark hallway. You don't want to look down there.
Nope.
That kind of brings that vibe back. Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm excited about this one. Hopefully we get, like I said, back to the horror factor where you're creeped out the whole time.
With like Fiddy Alvarez doing Don't Breathe and Evil Dead, I think that's what his vibe is going to be. Even though like I did finally watch the new Evil Dead, not the sequel yet, but like the new one that came out like, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever that he did. It was good, but it was scarier than the original, but it was still campy. So hopefully he goes like straight horror in regards to this, man. This is led by Isabella Mercad, Kaylee Spaney, David Johnson, Spike Fern, Ellie Wu, you know, so a bunch of young, outside of Isabella and David Johnson, like really no name actors, but I like that, right? I like that where that's kind of the rite of passage for a lot of young actors is like do a horror film. And if they're able to do a horror, if they're able to be in a horror film and do it right, that can launch pad McQuack their careers. So I'm excited for this one, man. Fiddy does a good job. Yeah, I said launch pad McQuack. I know.
I wasn't gonna bring it up.
I don't know what's going on. You know, it's the Grays. When the Grays come in, that's when the old man dad jokes are popping in. So, guys, we're going to throw Alien Romulus on our socials. Let us know your thoughts. Also, let us know your favorite Alien movie, team. Talk to us. All right, team. We got tarot cards, right? Is that how it's pronounced? According to IMDb, when a group of friends recklessly violates the sacred rule of tarot readings. Problem number one, guys. Like, why would you break a rule Anyway, they unknowingly unleash an unspeakable evil trapped within the cursed cards. One by one, they come face to face with fate, end up in a race against death.
Oh boy.
I just have like so many notes. Not for the writers, not for the directors, but just for, not even for like the actors themselves, but like the kids in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Those cards do not look fun at all. Like, if it was me or you, and we went up to like, you know, grandma's cat, my grandma would never have that, okay? She got a deck of Uno cards.
Well, let's also get something else clear off the bat. We would have never been going around looking for anything, and if we saw it and it looked like it was completely made of people's skin, definitely not touching it.
Nope. I just, like, I have never, you know, like, there's people who, like we talked about a few weeks ago, they got that Curious George mentality. Ooh, what's that? What's sound? What's that car doing outside in the middle of the night flashing their lights? It's over there. Leave it over there. If I open up something and see those cards, I'm going to say, nope, not for me. Closing this up, and I'm going to keep moving with my life. Also, if you bring those downstairs while we're out like partying and everything and hanging out and say, like, yo, let's play this game. No. I'm like that SpongeBob meme. I'm out. I don't want to play this.
Or like Homer walking back into the bushes. That one too. That's a good
yes.
it just disappears. I'm out.
I'm out of here, bro. Like, there's no way you're getting me to play. I've seen one too many of these movies. That's the problem.
Yeah. Like,
these kids have not seen any of these movies that are being made about these things. I I'm never going swimming anymore. Okay. I don't want a teddy bear. Okay. Forget an imaginary friend. Right. No Chucky doll. Right. Like, no, nope. I'm going to put myself in a box. Right. There's probably a scary movie called The Box or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
I
can't even
do that anymore. I hate Hollywood in horror. They have no original ideas. They can't do it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's impossible.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely not a situation I think I would find myself in. So yeah,
ever.
I'm right there ever. With you.
I mean, I saw our boy Jacob Batalon from the Spider-Man movies. He's in this with a bunch of other people as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, sometimes you just got to hope that everyone dies in this movie. That'll teach him a lesson.
There is a movie called The Box from 2009 that it is said, Norman Arthur Lewis, a suburban couple with a young child, receive a simple wooden box as a gift,
which Cameron bears Diaz, right?
fatal and irrevocable consequences. Yes.
Cameron Diaz.
Yes.
James Marsden, right?
Yes.
God, I'm good. Yes. I do remember watching that. I'm scared of boxes too, damn it. Thank you, Cameron Diaz.
Thank you, Cameron Diaz and James Marsden. All right.
Hey, team, we're going to throw Taro on our socials. Let us know your thoughts. I don't even have a follow-up question, guys. Just... this movie looks like trash. I'm just going to let you know right now. I'll probably end up watching it, though, because that's what I do.
Oh, dude. Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah.
X-Men 97.
Fantastic. All right, let's move on to the movie of the week.
Bobby said, no notes.
That's all we got to say.
No notes. Bro,
yeah, X-Men. Like, they're doing our crew, in some pretty awesome ways here. Obviously, they brought Cyclops out super strong. And then showing off Storm as a Omega level threat, which was pretty sweet. And her Storm she brought through.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they push the rest of the team going forward. I mean, we saw a little bit of everybody, but those two really were really put out front for these first couple episodes. Yeah.
Really enjoyed that, man. Like, them going after the Sentinels in that first episode was just fun. The plane blows up and everybody, like, you know, does their thing. Cyclops, like, see you on the ground. And just, like, I have seen a lot of dope-ass superhero, like, landings in my lifetime.
Superhero landing.
Not even, like, the landing, but, like, the way the hair was flowing. Come on, dog. That was dope as hell, man. Because, like, you know, like, I enjoy comic book adaptations and shit like that. But the one comic book that I actually, like, enjoyed reading, like, I did Spider-Man, but the other one was the X-Men comics, right? Those for some reason, I got a hold of a lot of them, and I read a lot of them, and a lot of different artists. And, like, Cyclops is the ultimate tactician. He's the ultimate badass. Like, he's the leader for a reason.
Right, right.
And, like, Fox made James Marsden a punk. I hated that. And, like, like, I love James Marsden as an actor, but they made him a punk. And I think they were going to try to do the young Cyclops, the young Scott Justice. They just didn't have enough time, right? That series kind of falls and rolls you back to that and everything. So I think they were trying to, like, build him up to be a badass, but they just didn't have enough time here. But, like, even the show back in the 90s, they made Wolverine awesome. They made Rogue and everybody else awesome. They really didn't let Scott be awesome. Like, that's what I want to see, because he is a man. So,
man, that's
outside of that. Yeah. So, like, outside of that, man, these X-Men are in a weird place. And this picks up right as the series ended in 96, 97. Where the professor's gone, team still has a mission, you know, and there's a lot going on in regards to what's next for this team. 11 episode arc, man. What was your favorite moment?
I think kind of that when you were saying, like, they were fighting the Sentinels, the Cyclops thing was awesome, but I really did enjoy the Storm scene there.
Yeah.
Where there's all these alarms going off and you think it's something else going on, and it starts saying, like, the Omega level threat, and it's Storm. And
Halle Berry.
You really never get to see the same thing with her. You really never get to see her be a super strong hero in the movie.
Yeah.
She's always, like, she's in the background a lot. And in this one, they really pushed her to the front and showed that she is actually a badass. So that was my favorite from the two episodes so far.
Yeah, man. I think the second one was, like, the first episode, they started off very, very strong. They both were enjoyable. I don't want to take anything away from them, and I'm enjoying this. First one was just a very strong episode, and the way that it ended was very strong. And then I think the second episode, as far as following, like, Eric Magneto and everything that he's about, it almost got a little too wordsmithy. But, like, if you remember, but, like, then I thought, like, and that's how I felt during the episode, and I still enjoyed it. But then I kind of thought back. I was like, that's kind of how Magneto always was, like, back in the 90s episodes as well. He was so just, like, Shakespearean with his words and how he felt and his speeches. You know, that's how he just, that's who he was. And you just got to take that at face value. Maybe that's a weak version, the weak version of the episode, but like overall, it was still very enjoyable. I love the twist at the end. And I'm super excited for Wednesdays, man. Like Wednesdays is going to be my favorite day of the week. Other than Mondays, I love you. I think Wednesdays, man, is where it's going to be at.
Yeah, I'm there with you, man. Yeah, I think you just kind of, you come out strong and then you kind of got to back into that story, right? Like,
yeah,
we can't just be super action packed the whole way. Agreed. I mean, we could, but, you know, you kind of need, you need something in there to keep you anchored to the story, right?
I agree.
So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Or it may completely go to garbage. Who knows? We'll see.
I'm along for the ride regardless, so. All right, team. We're talking about X-Men 97 here. We'll throw this on our socials. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you watched X-Men back in the 90s. If you weren't old enough to watch it then, have you watched it since? It is on Disney Plus. This show is on Disney Plus. Let us know your thoughts, team. Who's your favorite X-Men? And why is mine Cyclops? Every leader is my favorite. So, obviously, the Red Ranger. Obviously, Leonardo from the Ninja Turtles. Obviously, Cyclops. If they're the leader, that's my favorite character, damn it. Every damn time, so. All right, dude. Let's just jump into this movie of the week, man. I have been geeked for this since we last recorded on a Ghostbusters movie, man.
Same.
Three years ago. It's been 3 years.
Oh, gosh. You know what? I was thinking about that, too. Not to get off subject here, but when I was watching Godzilla versus Kong over the weekend, 2021.
Oh, my. We've been podding for a while, man.
It was when we talked about that movie. So, wow.
Yeah.
Time flies, man.
Time flies when you're hanging out with your best friend, watching and talking about movies, team. All right, team. We got Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. This movie just dropped here on March 22nd. This movie is directed by Gil Kenan and written by Gil Kenan and Jason Reitman, who directed the first one. Well, directed Afterlife, excuse
me. There you go. We have a $100 million budget. So far, we've grossed $61.6 million. Starring this, we have McKenna Grace as Phoebe Spangler, Finn Wolfhard as Trevor Spangler, Paul Rudd as Gary Gruberson, Carrie Coon as Callie Spangler, Kamal Nanjiani as Nadeem Rasmadi, Patton Oswalt as Dr. Hubert, Celeste O'Connor as Lucky, Logan Kim as Podcast, Emily Lind as Melody, Jay Marcaster as Dr. Lars, Bill Murray as Venkman, Dan Aykroyd as Ray, Ernie Hudson as Winston, Annie Potts as Janine Milnitz, and William Arthurton as Walter Peck.
That Walter Peck guy, he's back, ladies and gentlemen.
Awesome, awesome.
All right, man. So just from the start, the strongest character in this entire movie, we got the young, talented McKenna Grace as Phoebe Spangler. And just like she did in Afterlife, man, she definitely carried this film. And, you know, you love to see that from a young actor who is this talented. She takes what the script gives her, but then like adds so much nuances where you do get, you know, that Spangler modus from the 80s. You know, you kind of you get that vibe there with that, man. Very enjoyable. But we find her, man. She's in a different place. She wants to be a Ghostbuster, wants to be a full-time, doesn't really care about anything else. This is her lineage. This is her family birthright. And but she's a 15-year-old girl. So should she actually be doing this? No. She should be enjoying the summer, getting ready for school. You know, so she kind of feels left out of the family. So that kind of puts her into a weird place where she goes and finds solace in a ghost girl who has like been dead for a while, died in a fire at 16, right? Like that's where she finds solace through the movie. And I don't know about you, man, but like these movies in regards to alternative motives and stuff like that, you knew from the start that like that ghost chick was using Phoebe. Like you just knew that from the start. But kind of because Phoebe was in such a weird place, she was able to manipulate her without trying so hard, right? Like she's 15, she's vulnerable, she is going through a lot of changes, and kind of just wants to be a part of a team, wants to be a part of something, and everybody's leaving her out because she's so young. That's kind of like her whole thing. But then like when we finally get down to what's possibly going on and what the big, bad, scary ghost or monster is this movie, I love it that her and Ray kind of go on a old school Spengler stance mission to go kind of do all the science and research and everything, man. I thought like her as a good replacement for Harold Ramis in that role, that was dope to see, man. I felt that at every turn that they were together, man. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I didn't really understand. Like, I think the movie as a whole, like the whole Melody ghost part.
Yeah,
that was super kind of weird. Like, kind of romantic kind of thing, right? That line was kind of what led you to be like, oh yeah, this is what's going to turn against her. Something that has to do with this ghost, right? Whether it's going to be directly involved with like the main bad guy or like she's going to do something to like release her or do something crazy. But it was kind of, I think it felt like it just kind of popped in so fast for me. I didn't feel like it flowed right at the beginning. Like all of a sudden there's a ghost there and they're just like cool with each other.
So I will say this, this movie as a whole, it's bloated. Okay. This is a very bloated movie in regards to there's a lot.
It was it reminded me of Spider-Man 3. Like,
okay, there you go.
I enjoyed the movie, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on in regards to this here. So, like, in what you were saying there is, you know, with such a bloated screen time and so many characters and so much stuff going on, and you got to give homage to everybody, new, old, even returning characters that are not really important, you know what I mean? So there's just so much going on there where the buildup between Phoebe and Melody and kind of their kinship, it did happen a little too fast for my liking. But the way that the script kind of played Phoebe being so down, being not a part of the team, it's almost like, where else is she going to turn to? You know what I mean? Her brother's 18, doesn't want to deal with her. Mom is hanging out with Paul Rudd, who, I mean, can you blame her? You know what I mean? She just left the mayor's office, and the mayor, so she thinks, because the mayor hates her, the city hates her, right? So she really feels really down and doesn't really have any outlets. So it did happen too fast. I agree with that. But like what the script did for that with her, it made sense. Now,
Yeah.
Next character.
Yeah, it makes sense later on down the road.
Yeah. Now, our next character, Finn Wolfhard, Trevor, he really didn't have to be in this damn movie. He really did.
Like, he really did not.
Don't get me wrong. Like, my man, Stranger Things, my man,
he's 18,
Finn,
though, man.
Like, he's 18. Yeah. I appreciate that he came back for the sequel, but, like, you brought very little to this movie. You're not the only one, yeah. So I will say that multiple times, okay? But you're a part of the team.
He had his own storyline there on the side with Slimer. Which
that was it, though.
Which was some valuable screen time for somebody else that him and Slimer got.
Yeah. So you wanted to bring. So, like, you had that blue monster or ghost in the first one, which is like Slimer-esque. We actually bring back Slimer in this one. And you're like, okay, how are you going to do it? Well, everybody watching the trailer. But, like, I love it that it wasn't just that one scene of Trevor trying to catch him. It was multiple scenes. Him failing every single time of trying to catch Slimer, man. I thought that was really fun to kind of indulge in. And it just reminded you of not only, like, the original movie with Slimer, but even like the cartoon Ghostbusters, right? Where Slimer was kind of like their mascot, kind of hanging around the station and everything. Slimer, that's Slimer's house. You know what I mean? Like, he's chilling there. He's a member, right? That's his crib. So I thought that was cool, man. But other than that, like, you know, he's swooning over Lucky. But he really has not, he doesn't have much to do in this film. A couple of throwaway, like, gag lines and funny, but, like, not much. Obviously, the funniest person in the movie, not named Peter Venkman, was Paul Rudd as Gary Gruberson. Talk to me, man.
Yeah. Dude, Paul Rudd, man. I mean, when I watched the first one, I watched Afterlife before I went and saw this one. And him in that one was fantastic because you're just kind of getting to know him, you know? But even in this one, you're like, kind of, you're watching him grow as well, like as a step parent. And he's trying so hard. And then he's working. He's like, kind of the leader, but neither of them really know what's going on. You know, they get a call, they go out. Dude just delivers his lines like nobody else. Funny, but he was also kind of mean sometimes and was still funny at the same time.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Like, the thing with Paul Rudd and anything this man does, it's just like, I think I talked about it when we watched the trailer a few weeks ago. If he's on screen, I'm smiling, right? Yeah. It could be something heavy that just happened or whatever, but it's Paul Rudd. And it's just like, even when he's trying to be like serious dad or whatever, you know what I mean, stepdad, it's still just like, Paul Rudd, man. He's just like the greatest, funniest guy ever. And I just, like, I don't think I would get like movie star, like, oh my god, that's, you know, the first person that came to mind was Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy. I don't know why, but I didn't go that route. But like, I don't know. But if I was like, oh my god, it's Pete Wentz, Fall Out Boy, or somebody, I'm like that. But like, if it was Paul Rudd, I probably wouldn't freak out. I think I would just roll up and give him a hug. I think I would just want to give Paul Rudd. I just want a hug from Paul Rudd. And then, like, we'll go out separately. We don't have to go to dinner, hang out, or whatever. It's like, I hug Paul Rudd, man. You know what I mean? He gives that vibe. He gives that energy in everything that he does. I would like to see him kind of do something serious. Maybe he might have that in him. He might not. But I would still like to see kind of that change.
He does have a recent movie that came out where I think it's more on that line. I can't remember the name of it, but he just did one where he was, or one that's on its way out that he is kind of serious.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So well, he excels at this, right? Where it's a feel good comedy. Yeah. It's a little scary, family friendly. This was just fun. He brought it. The maturation with him, like you stated, it's him. Where's his place in this family? Right. Where,
yeah.
You don't want to overstep your bounds. But you know, when you see the kids out of line or something, you got to step in. You just don't know when and where. So, you know, having him have some maturation, that was really cool here. Carrie Coon as Callie Spangler, the mother of Phoebe and Trevor. And she's just mom. She's a part of the team. It's a weird family business now, ghost busting. But yeah, she kind of just like runs the show and she still has to be mom.
We get to see her like chilling sometimes, just like scrolling her phone. Like she's, she's just sitting on the couch. You know, it's not always go, go, go here for the Ghostbusters, right?
I loved watching that, though, yeah.
Yeah, they got some time, some downtime where they got to clean or they got to fix something. Or, like I said, she's just chilling, scrolling on her phone. That was really fun. That was where she had her best lines, to be honest with you, when she was just chilling and kind of being mean to her kids a little bit.
Having to be mom, man. It's when they're best. Moms are at their best when they're being mean to us, damn it. All right, man. Moving right along here. We got Kumail Nanjiani as Nadeem Rahzmati. And this is one of those characters where like this is where it starts to get bloated. If you're watching the movie, you're like, ooh, integral part. Okay, this guy's in here. Will it be just one scene? Will it be overarching in the entire movie? And you see him more and more. You're like, okay, he has a purpose now, right? He's this, comes from his long lineage and stuff like that. He's going to be a very important part of the movie. But then once you take like that step back when you walk out of the theater and get done with the movie, you're like, all right, this movie was overbloated. Trevor, him... could have been on the chopping block, could have combined what he needed to do with somebody else, you know what I mean? Like, it was not necessary. With what Kumail was handed, okay? With the script that he was handed and what he did, it's Kumail Nanjiani, man. And he's hilarious. He's fun.
Yeah, he's
a good time.
He's got his own delivery system, just like Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And he does that in this one, but that was weird. Like, he has an arc, but it's not really an arc in the movie. It's like pieces of it throughout the movie.
Yeah.
That you see him, like, you see him growing a little bit with his power, and then all of a sudden, it's just full-blown situation. just another... kind of broken piece of the movie he put in there.
Yeah. Like, enjoyable, and I laughed at, you know, his delivery. It's just that when you take that step back, you're like, okay, necessary, unnecessary, or could have kept him in and moved somebody else out, because my throwaway list, it's not over, okay?
Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed, like, him as that character before... it's discovered about him, right?
Like, yeah. No, agreed.
Like, he's selling those antiques and stuff. Like, if it would have ended there, that would have been perfect for me.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he's here. He did this thing. Now he's out. But he, like, kept coming in and out. And I think that's where we lost him at.
Even to the point where, like, they went back to his apartment, discovered that back room. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kumail, thank you for your services, okay? Like, we're good to go.
Right.
All right. You know what I mean? let the scientists kind of handle it from here. Moving forward, quick scene. We got Patton Oswalt as Dr. Hubert Worski. Helps out, kind of understands the myth of the big bad Garaka person. So it wasn't a long scene. It was not in the movie a lot.
Perfect.
Very
perfect for him.
I agree. Perfect. If you're gonna be like in a big, if you're gonna be in a big budget like spring summer blockbuster like this, man, that's a perfect amount. Kumail could have done that as well. It would have been awesome.
Yeah,
that would have been like something, and that would have been something everybody remembered, and for the rest of the year, right? Like his.
Yeah.
Let's give him the scene when he drops off the orb. Let's give him the scene when they go back to his apartment. That'd have been perfect. Patton.
Yeah.
Patton, seasoned veteran actor and comedian, no notes. No notes, sir. All right. We got Celeste O'Connor as Lucky Domingo. So she comes back, and this time she works for Winston Zeddemore's new ghost-busting HQ at this place. You were in Oklahoma, okay? What the hell are you doing in New York? Did we need to see you again? You were in the original. You were in the afterlife. Cool. But did we need to see you again? We did not. We did not at all. Appreciate you. What is your ties? You're not Zedmore's kid, or is there a pull a kid
I
from
believe she was middle an, of, she was an intern. She was an intern, Clyde. Let's give her a little bit. Okay. I don't know. Why?
That's my point. Was she sciencey in the first movie? Was she sciencey in Afterlife? Like, I don't think she was. So, like, it was just like, what are you interning about? It's because you had one run-in with a ghost. You are qualified to just not just help out and be an intern, right? She had after-hours privileges to, like, suit up and put a proton pack on, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Her card was, she was able to go get anywhere in that facility for an intern. Come on, man.
So, credentials, so guys. She just dropped below Finn, right? On the cut list.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. At least Finn is a Spangler.
he's got that going for him. Yeah.
At least he's a Spangler. Yeah, Ghostbusters in your bloodline, bro. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so like they give her a little bit to do, but it's unnecessary. Logan Kim as podcast, another one. He was in the first one, and yes, he was one of those standouts in the first one. This one, it was just like, agreed. What are we doing? It's the same exact thing. Yeah, you go on the ride with Ray and Phoebe to kind of figure out what's going on, but you're another one. Just because you were in Oklahoma doesn't mean that you're qualified to kind of do this now. And yes, your parents think you're at space camp. You're a child, okay? If your parents don't know where the hell you're at and you're in New York City, that's a problem. Like
staying in a grown man's basement.
That's a problem. You're a child. Okay. So like as you're seeing, right? Like this movie's a little bloated with so many characters so far that are unnecessary. And it's really bloated because we bring back the old living cast. Obviously, rest in peace, Harold Ramis. But we have we talked about Emily Alien Lynn as Melody, the dead girl who kind of influences Phoebe. James Acaster, who's Dr. Lars Penfield, who plays kind of the head scientist for Zeddemore's place. But then we bring back Venkman, Stans, Zeddemore, Melnitz, right? Walter Peck, right? The OG, triple OGs from the 80s. And it's just like, you want to give them a lot of time, but at the same exact time, you have all these newer characters. That's just a big cast. It's just a big cast in a movie this tight, right? But like, let's talk about it for a second. Bill Murray, I'm gonna chalk the, that's a cameo. Okay. Murray said, "You want me for one more scene than I did in Afterlife? Perfect, I can do that."
Send the check. Cut the check.
Cut the check, man. Cut the check, man.
Yeah.
But what I did enjoy, right, is like I talked about earlier, they gave Dan Aykroyd a lot to do in this movie, and they gave him a lot of screen time, and it's warranted. He's the standout. He's one of the writers of the original, him and Ramos. Ramos, excuse me. I don't know why I try to make him Spanish. Whatever. him and Ramos, but they give him a lot to do. So he's running around the city, working with Phoebe, trying to figure out what this next big baddie, Karaka, what's in this orb thing. To me, that's kind of the heart and soul of the Ghostbusters franchise, is kind of that, not just stopping the evil force, but kind of figuring out
And the research.
The research is fun, man. The research is the fun part. So he has a lot to do, which is fun. We got Ernie Hudson as Winston Zeddemore. And the one thing I will say, you know, they basically crapped on my man in that first movie. He was a part of the team, but he wasn't a part of any of the marketing. You know what I mean? He was like really a scientist, you know, crapped on him. He came front and center with the other three in the second movie. I appreciated that. But the fact that they made him this really rich guy in Afterlife in this, and he's the one who's kind of bankrolling them, that's giving my man his due. Is what that is. And I appreciate that a lot. Ernie Hudson, one of the hardest working guys in Hollywood, has always been. Great voice. Black actors, man. We got to stick together. Well, you got to stick with other black actors. I'm not really a black actor, but I digress. But no, his character, you know, he's running around telling Ray, like, dude, you need to slow the hell down. You can't be doing this. We're too old for this.
right, yeah.
But then at the end kind of laughs with him and be like, yo, this is what we do. We save the world from ghosts. You know what I mean? Like, so I.
And then he goes right into sales mode. Right. There. right. He just starts marketing right on the spot.
Sends his blood. Man. Cause busting makes me feel good, man. So.
oh, Paul Rudd. That dude.
We got Annie Potts as.
Perfect.
Annie Potts as Janine Melnitz. And for the record, one of my first crushes growing up was Janine. Janine Melnitz.
Let's go.
Because, like, New Yorker had that sass to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ghostbuster. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, it was... I was a kid and didn't know what sexy even was at the time. You know what I mean? At that young age,
it's crazy.
I was just a trap. You're welcome. You're welcome. But like, I didn't know. Like, I didn't even know what like sexy or attractive or anything was. Like, I just was too young for those concepts. I just knew I was just like, ew. You can answer my phone anytime.
Do I like this?
You know what I mean?
Do I like this? I'm not sure. Yes. I think I might.
I do like this a lot. oh man. Yeah. She works for Zeddemore and kind of helps keep the firehouse afloat for the Spengler family. So, and we got the mayor Walter Peck back, and he's just a guy who always wants to shut down the Ghostbusters. He's been wanting to do it his entire life in New York. Still can't do it. He cannot finally just shut them down. Just cannot do it. So
he just got to stay away from the scene. like every time he shows up on the scene, he gets put in these bad positions where he has to just swallow his words. If he just would stay away for a minute.
he'll be the hero. Yeah.
they do All destroy right, so much stuff in the city, though. So much stuff gets destroyed. Goodness.
when the Avengers were done in 2012, and they just kind of just went and ate shawarma. You know, all that damn destruction. You're not gonna help clean any of this up, guys.
Yeah,
you got a freaking god who threw. That's a thing, man. Like, let them clean everything up. So, they destroyed a lot of the city in this movie.
Yeah, they really did. Yeah.
Let's talk about like the look and feel of this sequel, man. we go from Oklahoma, where there's fault lines and nothing else, to back in the Big Apple. I don't know about you, man, but it felt really good being back having a Ghostbusters movie in New York. I feel like there's no other place you can really have a Ghostbusters movie outside of New York. Like, that's it.
That's enough backdrop, dead
people
man.
For everybody. Yeah, it's just the most beautiful setting for these movies. I enjoyed Afterlife, and I enjoyed what they did out there in Oklahoma, but it made sense, but it really is New York City. That's where you need to bust the ghost. So, anything in particular that like stood out to you that you enjoyed about the look and feel of this movie, man?
I enjoyed seeing Ecto-1 on the road a lot.
Yeah.
Like, in the older movies, it was a character, but it was never really part of the action, right? It was just, it was the transport from the firehouse to the situation. And in here and in Afterlife, we got to see it really be used as a piece of equipment in their ghost busting. And they really showed that even more in this one with the drone trap, which was awesome.
It really was, yes.
Using the RC car, the RC trap, you know, all that stuff's pretty cool. And really, it being another character was something I was really excited about. So seeing it going through the streets and that being the backdrop rather than like a cornfield was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I think they made New York, you know, that feeling that you got when you saw the Ghostbusters kind of running up and down the street, you know, with their proton packs, they got the little trap thing, whatever. They were in the hustle and bustle of New York, right? Those were those 80s movies, right? You got that vibe
everywhere
by them. Yeah, yeah. You got that vibe by them driving through New York, like you said, and, you know, just having the Dodge in and out of traffic and everything. And I agree with you, man. I think that was kind of my favorite thing to visually see in this movie. But, you know, so it's that, but also kind of the expansion of the firehouse, right? We saw a lot more of the firehouse. Firehouse was more lived in. You know, I don't know if the guys in the 80s lived there, but it's a full firehouse, so there's obviously beds, showers, you know, bathrooms, all of that, so they could, but we never got the vibe that they slept there, right? It was like more was this their office?
Well, they were also like, they weren't a family, right? They were grown men. Even
they were
in that
grown
time,
ass men,
like,
yeah.
Four, you know, separate men that, you know, I don't think they were, you know, sharing a wall, you know, on a regular basis.
And we got, you
but
know,
yeah, we did get to see a lot. That's pretty cool.
Venkman chasing Sigourney Weaver around for two movies. So, he's not going to spend, he's not going to spend much time with the guys at the spot. So,
nope, not at all.
All right, man. Let's go ahead and talk about a theme here. I think the theme, man, for this movie kind of revolves around trusting your family, right? Believing in your family is the vibe that I really got here from this. You know, outside of, you know, the big baddie, outside of, you know, the convoluted, this is going on, we have this new place to dispose of ghosts or you know, store ghosts or whatever. There was a lot going on in this movie. But if it kind of boils down to the story of like, hey, this is in our blood. This is what we do. This is our family heritage. This is our family lineage, right? We are the Ghostbusters, all of us, including Gary. So, he's a part as well. So, you know, just believing in your family and like trusting each other and, being able to count on one another.
Yeah.
I think that's the vibe that Gil and Jason was getting from this, man. And, you know, Jason Reitman's one of those writer directors who has a lot of family themes in his movies. He definitely brings it home with the writing in this as well. So even Nagiani's character with like him not being close to his grandmother, but then now understanding like why she was or who she was, you know, and kind of accepting that, you kind of got that vibe from him as well. It was just really fun to kind of watch that dynamic, even in this convoluted script, this convoluted, bloated movie. You still got that heart out of it, man. So very appreciative out of that. All right, team. So that is our conversation about 2024's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. JV, give me your thoughts and ratings on this, man.
Yeah, we talked about a lot in this one. How we had a lot of storylines going on at one time. A lot of things that didn't need to be there. And a lot of stuff that could have been cut out or cut down or people that could have been. I mean, your list was extravagant for the amount of salary we could have cut out of this movie. But I agree with it at the same time. I mean, I enjoyed seeing, like I said, the Ecto-1 on the road and seeing the original team kind of figuring out that it's kind of time to move on to the next step of their life, right? That Bustin' Ghost is needs to be handed down, and that they need to kind of move to the next step, which is whatever that is, right? So the movie, the franchise is evolving, and it's showing it on screen instead of it just like happening all of a sudden. And I really appreciate that in the movie, in the story. But this will get 4 buckets from me. I'll definitely be watching it multiple times. I had a good time, even though it was super long. But we'll just have to send our notes in, see if they can cut this down to a movie and a pod cut. Maybe we can get one of those.
One of those 90 minutes.
gone. Yeah. The 4 buckets.
Fine,
me, man. What about you?
Fine, guys. We will edit your movie, okay? Gosh. twisting our arms here.
Yeah, man.
For everything that I said that I don't like about this movie, it sounds like this is a 1 bucket of popcorn movie to me. It really was not, man. I thoroughly had a good time watching Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, man. Being back in New York, seeing the old cast, giving Ray Stant something to do, right? Putting the heart and soul of Phoebe in front and center of this movie and, you know, going through this with her and seeing her struggles. I appreciated all of that. The threat level. The one thing about the Ghostbusters movies, man, that is just like hilarious is there's the big baddie monster or whatever, but the threat level is just threat level is just so low at the end of the day. Like, it's just kind of like, like, you kind of take the big baddie with a grain of salt, you know? Yeah. That's also, like, the fun of it as well, because that's not what these movies are really about. You know what I mean? Like,
well, the thing is, like, it's typically the Ghostbusters that calls everything on some level. They get tied up. They get tied up in something and try to help.
That's so true.
They get tied up in it and try to help so much they kind of cause the problem, but then they fix it. And it's the mayor is the only one that sees that.
Exactly. I was literally about to say that. Yes. You beat me to it.
He's the only one that has to figure it out.
Peck is the only one that understands there should be no Ghostbusters on the planet, okay? So you guys, through every one of these movies, okay, you mess something up. You destroy half of the city, okay? And then somehow, miraculously, you save the day, and you're heroes? You're heroes.
Yeah.
You're causing your own destruction, basically. No, man. I really enjoyed this movie. It's not as good as Afterlife. I will admit that, because it's so convoluted with so many people. But it was still a good time. Loved what everybody brought, who actually was a necessary character. You have my list, damn it. This one's $3 of popcorn for me, man. This one is just like the other ones. I'll watch them over and over again. I'll probably do a Roadhouse thing where I watch them all. I mean, just back to back to back one day. That's a great time. You know what I mean? You got to see Slimer, the Stay Puffs, the mini Stay Puffs were in there. It's just good. It's just fun, man. Thank you for subscribing to this week's episode, talking through Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Next week, we'll be discussing Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire.
You can catch that in a theater near you.
Like always, I'm Clyde Smith. You can find me across all socials. I am Clyde D. Smith.
I am Javier Villalobos. You can find me on all socials at Mr. J8200.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.